And welcome to another edition of Pittsburgh Pop. Tim Benz and Rob Owen, glad that you're with us here at Trib Live. Thank you for checking in. I'm back for a day from training camp at St. Vincent College in Latrobe. Make sure you read all of our coverage on the sports side at Breakfast with Benz. Rob is checking in with me via our Zoom link today, and we got lots to talk about, including an update on the actor strike and what's going on with the Emmys. Rob, let's start there. What's the latest on the strike, and how is it affecting TV viewers, moviegoers, things of that nature?
Well, we're starting to see some dominoes fall, one of which includes the Emmy Awards. And I think when the actors' strike began, I said that the Emmys are not going to happen in September as scheduled, and indeed they will not. We don't yet know when they'll be rescheduled for. I've heard talk as late as January, which seems super late to me, but maybe they're just that pessimistic about when the strikes will be resolved. So the Emmys not happening in September. In addition, we're starting to see networks move programming around for a couple different potential reasons, but mostly strike related. So Hulu had an FX series, Murder at the End of the World, that was supposed to debut the last week of August. That is now moved to a undetermined date in November. And I don't know if that is because they're hoping the strike is resolved by then, so they will have actors to promote it, or if it's that they are trying to space out their originals and that gives them an original near the holidays. So for the ad supported stream of Hulu, you can put your Christmas ads in this new original programming. I'm not sure exactly which is the reason they moved it, but it, regardless, it had to do with the strike. You're also seeing there was some pushback over the weekend from actors concerned about waivers that SAG-AFTRA has given to some productions to continue filming. The explanation is that this is part of their strategy. If it is an independent production not associated with an AMPTP entity, the big Hollywood studios, they want those indie productions to continue because they are continuing going, using the proposed contract rules that were last on the table before the strike happened. So they want the big studios to see that that indie productions can go forward with those agreements that the big studios rejected. So that's another piece of what's been going on in the strike. Appears that most of those concerns have been quelled because some people were like, well, they're just going to sell it to a streamer anyway. Which may be true in some cases. Mm-hmm. So, but it seems like there may be some guardrails in place for that. It's a little bit unclear, but.
Well, so, I saw over the weekend that the Brad Pitt movie Apex, the Formula One race car movie that he was filming, he apparently in solidarity with the workers, the union, decided to shut down filming of that. It was being filmed in Budapest. Why hadn't it been shut down already? I mean, I figured that would have been the case. Why did that one continue for as long as it did?
I do not know specifically. I don't know if since the strike began, they were filming without actors who are part of SAG-AFTRA, because I would have thought that it would have shut down. I know some things didn't shut down, like House of the Dragon, because its entire cast is Equity, which is the British version of SAG-AFTRA. And by law in England, they cannot strike in solidarity with SAG-AFTRA. So House of the Dragon had to keep going. I don't know the particulars on that Brad Pitt movie. Like you, I'm a little surprised that it did not shut down immediately.
I mean, one thing that I thought the same thing kind of initially was, well, because it's being filmed in another country, does that have something to do with it? But if you're SAG-AFTRA, I guess, doesn't that cross all borders?
It does, but I'll give you another example. So there's a new Alien series for FX from Noah Hawley, and I read last week that it is beginning production in Thailand, but only with the Equity actors, the British actors. So I think there is one cast member who is American, and they are shooting around that person. So all of that person's scenes are being pushed to the end of the filming schedule in hopes that the strike resolves by then so they can film that actor scenes. But all the other actors are British, so they're able to continue.
In my time covering, talking about, writing about labor disputes in sports, one breaking point always seems to come down to where does the rift exist, either within management or within the union itself? In other words, when do the lower paid athletes look at the higher paid athletes and say, hey, we need to start making money. You guys have a lot of it. That's why you're holding out for as long as you are. This isn't fair to us. This is a good enough deal for us. Let's get back to work. Or it's, you know, the higher paid athletes saying, ah, this is a good enough deal. Even if it does screw over the lower paid guys, let's get back to playing baseball again. You know, similarly, you get that on the management side. You know, this has been the big complaint from Pirates fans about Bob Nutting, that the lower revenue generating owners cave whenever there's a debate during a labor stoppage within the ownership about what sort of package should they accept. They cave into the big market teams and don't hold out for what's in their own best interest. So there's usually a breaking point on one side or the other. Where do you see that potentially transpiring? Is it on the studio side or is it on the actor side? Who's more aligned at this point? Who has more solidarity within their argument, I guess is the best way to ask it.
I mean, my sense is that the greater solidarity is with the writers and the actors within those two guilds because of what they see as an existential threat. To me, it's the studios that have a lot of there's a lot of daylight between what they can and will and are used to accepting. And I think we talked about this a little bit before, how on the one side, you have the traditional Hollywood studios, Disney, Paramount, NBC, Universal, who are accustomed to sharing data because of Nielsen, and that's been something that's shared forever. And then on the other side, you have the tech companies, the Apple, the Amazon, the Netflix,
right,
who, you know, will never share data. So to me, there is greater room for disagreement on the studio side than there is among the strikers.
Gotcha. Now, if we do see new product to be made soon, Donald Glover, who played Lando Calrissian in Solo, he's going to write a Lando series for Disney Plus with his brother Steven. They were together in Atlanta, correct, on FX? Now, what's this going to be about? Take us through the thinking behind this one.
So a Lando spinoff series is something that Disney Plus has talked about going back to, I think, 2020, I think, when they first announced it. And originally, the director, Justin Simien, who just did the Haunted Mansion movie for Disney, he was attached to write and direct the Lando series. And at some point, evidently, that fell apart. And now Donald Glover and his brother Steven, they wrote together on Atlanta, so they have experience working together. They are being brought in by Disney. They evidently have a take that Disney is excited about. It hasn't been greenlit yet. I think it is still in development, but I'm cautiously optimistic it might come to fruition. But I mean, we've been down this road with so many Disney Star Wars projects that then crumble. So we'll see. But I like the idea of it. I think Atlanta was a terrific show. I thought Donald Glover really, he has a voice. I would be interested to see that filtered through the Star Wars universe. And obviously he would come back to play Lando. And I would love it if they got Billy Dee to do some wraparounds or something. So we'll see. We'll see. But it's potentially exciting.
Yeah, I think that's a character that could be mined a little bit deeper. Oh, he's interesting
absolutely.
Enough. And, you know, if you look at the backstory that he had, similar to the backstory that Han Solo had, and Boba Fett, too. I mean, I think they stretched it a little thin on the Boba Fett side.
Yeah,
we've talked about
there.
That. But you know, I do think there's meat on the bone when it comes to what you can get out of a Lando series. I think that's wise, you know,
to do
some sort of spinoff there. Now let's get to a couple other shows that might be worth talking about, including The Beanie Bubble on Apple TV Plus and Twisted Metal on Peacock.
Yeah, so Beanie Bubble is a movie on Apple TV Plus. It is ostensibly a comedy. It is not as funny as you might hope, but it is. If you are someone who enjoys sort of a glimpse behind the scenes at a business run amok, it's a pretty entertaining story about Beanie Babies that were all the rage in the 90s and how they, you know, became this big thing. It's mostly about the three women behind the guy, Ty. After, if you look at the Beanie Babies,
yes,
they all have a
yeah.
tag that says Ty. He is the one who started the company, but this is really about the three women that were most influential in the creation and success of Beanie Babies, women whom he basically dismissed their efforts and did not treat them very well. And so it's an interesting process sort of piece that if you're into that kind of thing, which I tend to be, you might enjoy. Just don't go in expecting it to be super funny, but it's got a good cast: Elizabeth Banks, Sarah Snook, and then Zach Galifianakis plays the Thai character. So I think if you know you like process pieces, that is a good one on Apple TV Plus. Twisted Metal is a series based on a PlayStation video game that I'm not familiar with. Did you ever play Twisted Metal?
No, I was not a big video game guy, and the extent of my video game stopped somewhere around the Atari 5200.
Okay, so. me too. But this is a PlayStation game from roughly 1995. It's a car crash up vehicular game. The series is on Peacock. It stars Anthony Mackie, who was in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. He's very good. And it's set in a post-apocalyptic world where he plays a milkman who runs errands between walled cities in America. It's dystopian, but with a comedic side. And then he also has a partner played by Stephanie Beatriz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And it's episodic, like there's an overall arc, but then each episode is a different sort of mini adventure that he's having as he's trying to complete this mission to get from San Francisco to Chicago and back. It's bloody. It's gross. There's a crazy clown voiced by Will Arnett, who's actually kind of an interesting character because he's a little bit more than a crazy clown. You get some backstory on him. But really, Anthony Mackie is the star. He's very charismatic. Some of his line readings are a little Eddie Murphy-esque in the comedic delivery. I thought that the whole thing got a little bit tiresome at points, but maybe that's just me and my tolerance for post-apocalyptic smash 'em up car stuff. But overall, I thought it was fairly entertaining, and at least it had humor, which so often post-apocalyptic dramas or comedies, or there aren't comedies, they're usually just dramas. So I appreciated that twist.
I forgot about one more, Dark Winds on AMC.
Yeah, so Dark Winds is a series set on the Navajo Reservation in the early 1970s, based on a Tony Hillerman story, a series of novels about a reservation chief, Joe Leaphorn, and his partner, Jim Chi. It's a project that Hillerman died before this iteration of it came to the screen, but his friends Robert Redford and George R.R. Martin from Game of Thrones shepherded it to AMC. It had its first season last year. The second season is now, the first episode is now streaming on AMC Plus. New episodes drop on the streamer Thursdays and debut on linear AMC on Sundays. It's extremely well done. Like, I'm not the world's biggest true crime fan, but they do true crime in this show in a way that the cultural specificity of filtering it through the native lens and the setting on the Indian reservation makes it a lot more interesting, I think. And in the first season, there was a little bit of hints of supernatural stuff. There's less of that in season two, but there's some terrific performers. Zahn McLarnon is the lead as Joe Leaphorn. They give his wife a lot more to do this season and sort of explore something that was touched on last season, which was the forced infertility of Native women in the 70s. And they go into that deeper in season two. The other thing I really like about Dark Winds is it's six episodes. So we have so many shows nowadays that are like 10 episodes and they don't have enough story to fill it. In both seasons of Dark Winds, it is the right size. They have story for six episodes. There's no fat on the bone. This season, Jeri Ryan from Star Trek Picard and before that Star Trek Voyager has a recurring guest star role in it. So there are a lot of reasons to watch Dark Winds for Trekkies. That's just an added one.
Awesome, Rob. What else can we expect in TV Talk and TV Q&A this week?
Let's see, TV Talk, we've got multiple musicals. Only Murders in the Building comes back next week, and it is set behind the scenes of a Broadway musical with music by Pasek and Paul, the guys who did the music for Greatest Showman. And then Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which is fast becoming my favorite Star Trek. They do a musical episode. And so I will write about both of those in TV Talk. And then TV Q&A, we've got a question about a local TV reporter. So that is coming up as well.
Is the local TV reporter covering the alligator in the Kiski River?
I don't know.
I want to see, like, whenever they start filming again and writing again, I want the Kiski River to ostensibly be the setting for the sequel to Lake Placid with the giant alligator that dominated our news coverage.
I think that is a great idea. Lake Placid, written by David E. Kelly, very familiar to TV viewers from his work on Picket Fences, Ally McBeal, etc. But yeah, I mean, this to me seems like something for Sci-Fi Channel, if they're even still doing their original movies anymore. I can see that.
I see an easy segue from Shark Week to Alligator Week. I mean, I think you're hitting the same audience, aren't you?
Okay. Yeah, I can see it.
All right. Also on the sports side, Breakfast with Benz will be back up at training camp. We'll play more interviews as the Steelers continue to practice up there through the 18th of August, and we'll get to the preseason eventually. We're closing out July here and then getting to the second week as they come back after a day off today. And then they'll get back at it, and we'll have lots of coverage, including from the night practice on Friday night as well, at Breakfast with Benz. And you can check us out each and every Monday. Rob Owen, Tim Benz with you right here at Trib Live for Pittsburgh Pop.